So often in American history, it's been some great disaster that has produced a sea change in the way we see the world around us. Tragic events that generate social and cultural upheavals that ripple far out into the future, past even the memory of that original disaster. For instance, if you go to any national park or wilderness in the United States today, you will find the friendly, heroic figure of the forest ranger, a uniformed custodian of the natural splendor of the United States and a watcher for forest fires. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Timothy Egan, 100 years ago, how did the people of the West view this idea of a uniformed federal forest ranger?
Well, good morning, and it's great to be with you. They were against it. The Rangers were these, you know, enemy, these people out of Yale, these kids full of this great crusade of Teddy Roosevelt, and they go out.
Invaders, they were like.
Yeah, exactly. They were seen as these, you know, Eastern elite sissies, Green Rangers, all these things, and they chased them out of the woods. They killed a ranger, and they mistook him for a deer.
Well, the story of how all that changed is the subject of Tim Egan's new book, The Big Burn, Teddy Roosevelt and the Fire That Saved America. It's about a disastrous wildfire in 1910 that burned an area in Montana and Idaho the size of Connecticut. It's a gripping story of how the modern conservation movement, it can be said, today's entire green movement in some respects, was born in a conflagration that changed the way America looked at land and vindicated an idea big Teddy Roosevelt had imposed on America when he was president. First of all, why this fire?
Well, there's been nothing like it, just in pure terms of ferocity, size. Five towns burned to the ground, 3 million acres, 36 hours, a day and a half, as you said, the size of Connecticut. And I was originally drawn to it just for the cool, natural disaster part of it. But then the backstory really drew me in. Roosevelt, the only native of New York City ever to be president, and one wonders how Rush Limbaugh would feel about him today,
exactly.
Who said later he wanted to steer the Republican Party into a fairly radical, progressive party. Those were his words. And the key to that was the public lands dream. He set aside an area about the size of France for all Americans. This was the public land endowment that we all have as part of our democracy.
At a time when American wealth was based on grabbing land in the very same area of the West.
Precisely. This was the last clash of the big Gilded Age powers. They all had their headquarters here in New York City. And they did not want to – they wanted to get their hands on this timber, this mining wealth, et cetera. So they opposed Roosevelt. Roosevelt leads office. The public lands dream is orphaned. His chief forester is fired. This is 1910, almost 100 years ago next year. And these rangers are being run out of the woods. So they're being harassed by a hostile Congress, his fellow Republican Party that wants to defund the Forest Service. These Gilded Age powers are after him, these E.H. Harrimans, all these people we know now mainly as philanthropies. and they're being chased out of the woods as well.
Then, and that's before the fire.
The eve of the fire.
So the bidding is, here's this federal program that Roosevelt created. These rangers are in the woods. It's kind of a symbolic program. Taft gets elected president. Roosevelt is out. And the whole thing is like, never mind about that silliness. We're not going to be serious about that. And then the fire happens.
Exactly. And it's, you know, they find these Deadwood-like cities in the woods. They find these brothels, these miners, these people who are just, you know, chasing them everywhere. And when the fire happens, it's catastrophic. I mean, it's 70-mile-an-hour winds, which are hurricane-force winds that knock you down. And it's a blow-up. It's a beast of its own. It's a thing that feeds on its own weather system. But it has the ironic effect of making mythic heroes. It's sort of their creation myth of the young rangers. They've died in battle.
They were largely immigrants. Mostly immigrants.
They're black soldiers.
The Buffalo Soldiers,
who were almost double the African-American population of the state of Idaho when they're sent there.
Right.
They're poor Italians. This is the peak of Italian immigration. I traced two people back to their village in Italy.
Which is an incredible story all by itself.
Right.
Yeah, and they're treated really poorly when they come here, too, and they sort of cast around the West. They go to work for Teddy's big, great dream for 25 cents an hour. So they die, these soldiers die, and they're all led by these young rangers, most of whom are in their 20s, just out of college. And Roosevelt, a superb politician, then storms the West, pounds his bully pulpit, which he invented, by the way, that term, his favorite expression, and makes, as any good politician will do, makes events into policy, makes it into narrative. And has the effect of making mythic heroes of these people, and single-handedly using this fire, using this event, turns public sentiment.
Let's listen to some of the rare actual recordings of Teddy Roosevelt's voice. This is from August 1912. Listen.
I believe in the right of the people to live. I believe that the majority of the plain people of the United States will, day in and day out, make fewer mistakes in governing themselves than any smaller class or body of men, no matter what their training, will make in trying to govern.
So in the midst, in the crucible of fire, this huge figure, Teddy Roosevelt, creates this political movement that becomes the conservation movement of today and turns the Rangers into heroes. Do we really need a Teddy Roosevelt today to actually deal with the environmental problems that are maybe even more severe than saving the lands back in 1910?
Someone said in the review of the Washington Post of this book that what Barack Obama is trying to do with health care right now is analogous to what Roosevelt did with the conservation dream. It was a huge experiment. It was radical, and he had pushback at all levels. Roosevelt actually wanted to have a global summit on the environment. That was his last thing he wanted to do 100 years ago, similar to what Merkel is going to be talking about today in the Congress.
Right, the German chancellor.
Exactly what they're trying to do. He wanted to get all the nations together. They didn't call it climate change. He said, let's just take stock of this planet that we share. He was so ahead of his time in that way. Now, the difference between him and most leaders is this guy, you heard his voice, it doesn't really match the image of the face, does it?
No.
But he knew how to move public sentiment.
And let's talk about the public sentiment. I mean, you say in this book, and convince me, that every American changed the way they looked at land. It wasn't a commodity anymore. It was a national trust.
Right. It was two things, really, John. They believed that American democracy could not be complete without the public land part of it, that Jefferson gave us all, you know, all men are created equal, the initial philosophical push. But the second half of it was the public lands endowment, the idea that the little guy, that's what they always call it, the little guy, owns a piece of this big chunk of what was left over from Louisiana Purchase. And that was to counter the Gilded Age, these powers, this concentration of wealth, which had never been so great until just a few years
ago.
Until
now.
Right, exactly. So I love all those echoes from the immigration part of it, the Gilded Age part of it.
The environment part of
right.
it, and,
right.
and also the fight over the identity of the Republican Party, right. which we're seeing
right.
again as
and,
well.
And in fact, the split that happened after this set the course for the Republican Party for the next 100 years. The progressive left, the Democrats, which were largely the base of racists, South, anti-conservation, the party roles completely flipped over the course of 100 years.
So when we see these CNN pictures of wildfires in California and the West, it's echoes from all these fires that are still burning.
I'm glad you asked that, because thereafter they vowed to put out every fire. And
right.
what the net result was, they had all this fuel buildup, all these trees that should
right.
fire's part of nature.
Indeed.
You know? So it had this, it did save the public land stream. That's why I say it saved America. But they then tried to put out every fire.
Right.
And so they were fighting nature in that regard.
Well, Timothy Egan, thanks so much for being on the show this morning. Timothy Egan, of course, the author of the Big Burn, Teddy Roosevelt and the Fire That Saved America. And if you want to hear that interview again, you can take our podcast to go.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.